Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Zach Jackson from Garrison, North Dakota, winner of the 2025 North Dakota Governor's Cup Walleye Tournament. He and his partner, Bob McKeenan of Bismarck, they weighed 51.77 pounds, shattering the previous tournament record of a two-day weight of 43.84 pounds. That was back in 2013. They weighed almost 52 pounds. That is super cool. 260 boat tournament. These guys are fanatical anglers, but definitely not your traditional professionals by any means. No boat sponsors or anything like that. These guys are just some hardworking dudes that love to fish, and they do really well together. And they put their heads down the last couple of years to figure this body of water out. And boy, this year it really paid off, and it's a really cool story. So yeah. The North Dakota Gov Cup, always a fun one to talk about here, and we got Zach on to tell us all about it. So let's get to it. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Tell me kind of who you are, where you're from, and your fishing story, like where you started fishing and what that all looked like. What's, you know, maybe some of your childhood experiences, if it goes that back that far.
Yeah. So originally I grew up in Alexandria, Minnesota. I grew up on the lake. Like, we had a dock and a boat lift, and the boat was always in. And I mean, pretty much my earliest childhood memories, I was fishing. My dad was real big into fishing. Obviously started out chasing bluegills and crappies underneath the boat lift and underneath the dock. And my mom and dad were just so awesome. I mean, I look back and it's like, I've got a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old now. And I think of the things that they let me do when I was, you know, 5 down on the dock. And my mom would literally put a life jacket on me and she would sit there for hours and just let me fish. And then when I got a little bit older, probably 6 or 7, we had this paddle boat, and she would tie me to the paddle boat, and then she would put like 100-foot rope tied to our dock. So I had this arch. I literally had this arch, and I could get to this patch of lily pads on one end and this willow tree over on the other end. And I mean, I spent my entire childhood fishing. And then as soon as I was old enough, my dad would let me take the boat out, and it was kind of a chain of lakes. So there's like 6 or 7 lakes connected. And I mean, that's what I did. I fished every single day of the summer. and fish with my dad. He would take us out walleye fishing all the time. And same with the winter time, we had the fish house out in front of the house. And I just, every single night of the week in the winter, me and him and my brother, my mom, like, we were down there and we were walleye fishing. And it was just, that's where it started. And I really haven't let up. I went to college in Crookston, and it's over in the Red River Valley. So if you know anything about that area, there's not a lot of fishing to do other than catfish. And that's just not my style. So kind of during that time, I got a little bit out of it, and I actually kind of got into the bow fishing tournaments for a while, shooting carp. And me and a couple good buddies from Bismarck traveled around the country doing that for a few years. And I kind of got out of fishing just while I was living in Bismarck doing that. And I ended up taking a different job and moved to Garrison, and really about 6 years ago, and just really got focused on, I mean, we did a lot of prairie potholes before, and I loved it over by Harvey and all that area. But once I moved to Onsakaka, it's like, just the fishing alone, obviously prairie potholes are fun, but you're not catching big fish. And so the last 5 years, 6 years, that's pretty much what I've done. That's why I moved to Garrison. I lived a few years in Minot and just knew, like, this isn't going to work for me. It's too far after work to make it to the water, and I can't only fish 2 days a week. So, I got married. We got married 5.5 years ago to my wife, Chloe, and she absolutely loves fishing too. So we pretty much, unless it's hunting season, we're fishing in the winter and the spring and the summer, and even some in the fall now, honestly, just because it's so easy to go out and do it. So that's kind of how I progressed. I've done quite a few trips up to Canada. I had a good group of buddies from up in Canada that before I got married, I would go up there quite a bit and lake trout fish and walleye fish, like up at Wekusko Falls Lodge, went up there and with, I know, you know, Brett McComas and Dick Linder, and fished with those guys. They invited me up there with them and did that. And just a bunch of trips like that. I mean, kind of after college and when I was single, I would work 60, 70 hours a week. And then I was driving somewhere to go fishing. So that's just, I don't know. It's really kind of, other than family and, you know, going to church and whatever, it's kind of consumed me.
What the heck? So how do you know Brett? Is Brett from the Alexandria?
So I know him from Alexandria. I mean, he was a year older than me and in high school. It's funny too, we lived on the same lake and we didn't know, when we were younger, middle school, we didn't know each other. But I just remember I knew who he was and he knew who I was, but we weren't friends at all. And I just remember he always had the coolest bass boat, and he would come, and it kind of irritated me. He'd come fish bass underneath my willow trees on our lake shore there. And, you know, so that was, I mean, me and Brett, we've been on quite a few trips together. And that's so, yeah, funny. I've known him since about high school, and we got a lot of really good mutual friends. And I met Nick through him on that Wekusko trip, and just great dudes.
That is silly. That's funny, man. That's small world.
Yeah.
So like the tournament fishing, like how does, you know, do you have any other tournament fishing experience, or like, how did that all, like, well, how does that all fit into this?
I mean, I moved out in like 2011. So I've been here, you know, and that part of the thing, I didn't really fish Lake Skakawea and I didn't fish the river because around Alexandria, we don't have rivers. They're all lakes, and they're, you know, 200 acres to 2,000 acres. So I grew up, and my dad, you know, back in the day, like, we drug Lindy rigs on weed lines. And so when I moved out, I mean, that's why I fished a lot of prairie potholes, I think, is because I was comfortable with them. I was, you know, more like fishing at home. There was the weed lines. There was some flooded trees, and we've got some lakes with that type of stuff close to home. And so I did a lot of that, and I kind of started to realize, like, man, it didn't take long to realize, like, North Dakota just is unbelievable. I mean, the fisheries that we have here it's just mind blowing. Like, I go back to Minnesota now, and nothing against Minnesota fishing, but it's like, it's just a different world here. You can catch them shallow, you can catch them year round. And so, I mean, I spent a lot of time on the potholes. And then, like I said, when I moved down to Garrison, I just knew, like, this is where I want to live. There's hunting and there's fishing in my backyard year round. And it took me a couple years to understand fishing the reservoir. I mean, the water level moving all the time, the lack of weeds, like, there, you know, other than in the backs of the bays, there's no weeds. And I always used to go to the weed line, like every lake in Minnesota, you fish that weed line. And I got, it took me a couple years. I really struggled my first two or three years living on Sakakawea and fishing it regularly to kind of understand it. I'm good friends with, like, Kellen Lattengrass, and he, you know, I would go out with him, and he would show me some tips and just picking things up from different guys. Like, I made a huge group of good buddies that are great fishermen that fish Sakakawea, and they, you know, kind of showed me the ropes on what to look for and what you're doing out there. So as far as tournaments, I mean, man, I did a lot of bow fishing in tournaments, and we would go to the World Championship every year, wherever it was. And so I kind of had, like, I love tournaments. I mean, they're just a ball. And the first 3 years I lived in Garrison, I wasn't in the Governor's Cup. And I remember Governor's Cup weekend, I was just, like, almost just depressed that, you know, it's like, man, I should be out there. And all these guys are out there having a ball. And so then 3 years ago, we're like, let's do it. And we got on the waiting list, and we ended up getting in. And after that, it's like, I wouldn't miss it for the world. It's our, my entire family, it's our favorite week of the year.
So it's like the only walleye tournament fishing experience you have is the Gov Cup last 3 years?
I fished the Bakken Classic.
Okay.
Just stuff, tournaments, you know, that type of thing, or work tournaments and that type of stuff. But as far as actually, I did fish the NWT as a co-angler last year.
Okay.
Which was an absolute blast. I spent a day with Jay Cahy and a day with Tom Kimos. And I mean, you couldn't ask two better guys to draw and spend a day in the boat with. I mean, both just super, super good fellows and obviously phenomenal anglers. But yeah, other than that, like, I'm not, and this summer we had big plans of doing a lot of tournaments, 'cause I was pretty amped up about it. And then just the way the schedules worked out, we spent a week on Leech Lake in Minnesota this summer, and that two of the tournaments that we wanted to fish were on those two weekends. And we wanted to fish the Dakota Walleye Classic coming up here, but me and my wife are leaving for Alaska on Thursday to go up there fishing for 10 days. So it just didn't work out.
Dude, I think that's really, really cool, man. But now this tournament, like this year, you and your partner, we should kind of introduce that, you know, who's your partner, and, you know, how did you guys kind of meet, and what's your dynamic in the boat?
So my partner's Bob McKeon. He lives down in Bismarck, and we actually met in college, and he loved killing ducks and catching fish, and I loved killing ducks and catching fish. And we literally, the first time I ever met the guy is, we had the same permission for the same goose field, and we met out there on opener at like 2:30 in the morning, and we ended up hunting together, and we killed an 8-man limit of geese. And after that, it's like, we've pretty much, you know, been best friends since then. And that we fish together, and our families spend time together. And so me and him have fished it all 3 years together. And I mean, it's kind of a blessing and a curse. We've fished together so much. I mean, he's one of the only guys I really spend a lot of time fishing with. And we've kind of, we know the same stuff and we do the same stuff and we fish the same water and we think about the same places to fish. So it's almost a struggle because it's like, we're almost not learning anything new from each other, but we're also like, we're just so comfortable. I mean, like this year we knew going in that it was the guys sitting in the front of the boat, live scoping off the front. I mean, we had two live scopes and we actually had three. We didn't even use one, but we had two in the boat and it's like, we knew the guy sitting in the front of the boat is going to catch 95% of the fish. And that's what happened. But I mean, we're a team, you know? So yeah. He's picking them off the back. He's weighing them. He's netting them. And it's like, man, it's just so fun fishing with someone that he doesn't care how we catch them. He doesn't care, you know, what we're doing. It's just, and he was out there, you know, hammering around pre-fishing all week, looking for spots and finding them. So it's a super good relationship that we got because there's no, I mean, it's just whatever works and we're going to do whatever it takes to do it.
Yeah. That sounds like the dream team though, right? Like your buddy from college, like think about all the cool stuff or that you've thought you would maybe do the rest of your life and who your buddies are that you'd want to do it with. It's like, oh, I want to win the Gov Cup someday, you know, while you're sitting there trying to graduate college and maybe get a job or not. And then, you know, it's like, yeah, we should do that together. You know, cheers, dude. Let's do that someday. And it's like, oh, you made it happen.
It's funny you say that because we're cruising across the lake. I can't remember if it was on tournament day. I think it was. I think it was on the first day. And we had a big bag already. And it was like 11 o'clock and we're cruising. And, you know, the lake is just, I mean, it was like calm, gorgeous out. And I'm just looking around at the lake and I'm like, man, I literally said, I'm like, did you ever think that we were going to be, you know, 35 years old out on Lake Sakakawea fishing the Governor's Cup, killing it, and we get to live here? Like, dude, you know, looking back, it's like, I would have never guessed. Like, I thought I was going to end up in, you know, somewhere in Minnesota, and so did he. And we probably fish together once a year at Lake of the Woods or something. And it's like, just, gosh, it's been a blast. And
yeah, and you're just getting started, man. I mean, you're just getting it sorted out. But to get a little bit more serious and kind of sink our teeth into this fishing story a little bit, I kind of want to hear whatever you're willing to share, starting with kind of pre-fishing. What was the pre-fishing like, and what are some of the things that, you know, you've been looking for? And I paid enough attention, to some of the interviews and stuff like that. You talked about how, now you haven't exactly been fishing with live scope since day one, you know, when it hit the market. You know, it's a little bit of a newer technology that you're implementing. So I'm kind of curious about, kind of deciding on your strategy and learning that technology and kind of, you know, how that has all played in.
So, yeah, I mean, I bought my first live scope last year. It was middle of summer, and it was actually like a week or two before the Governor's Cup last year. And I was out fishing and I was fishing the usual spots. Like, you know, I could find a bunch of eaters with it and was catching them. And I kind of stumbled upon it. I had drifted off of just kind of a community hole pre-fishing and had drifted out a little bit deeper and I started to see these suspended fish, and I'm like, man, like these aren't, like, you know, guys talk about them, but I'm like, there's no way these are walleyes. Like, they're 10 feet 8 feet down in 40 feet of water. And I casted and I caught like a 6 pounder, and I casted again and I caught like an 8 pounder. And it was actually like the afternoon before day one of the Governor's Cup last year. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And I started looking around, and we had to be at the rules meeting in like 2 hours. And I start looking around and there's fish everywhere. And like, I didn't really know what I was doing. I hardly even knew how to use my live scope. I mean, I had it on a pole on the side of my boat, for heaven's sakes. And I called Bob and I'm like, dude, and we were struggling. I mean, we could catch small fish, but it was a struggle. And I'm like, dude, I figured out something weird, and there's nobody even, like, I haven't seen anybody here all day. They're in the community spot, but not out deep. And sure enough, day one, we went out and we were in fifth place. And day two, we only had one spot and the fish weren't there. And we whiffed it. I mean, we ended up in 37th or 34th or something, like 3-pound day. But it was kind of then that I realized, like, wow, this, like, I can actually go out and, like, not only can I find fish, because, I mean, I wasted hundreds of hours, like, the couple previous weeks just trying to fish that aren't going to eat. I mean, you just got to peel yourself away. There might be 100 fish there, but it doesn't mean they want to bite. So it kind of, I kind of figured that out, and it really, like, a switch clicked, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of this, and I've seen them. I just have never really put two and two together. And then, what was it, 2 weeks later, I had signed up as a co-angler, and the first day I went out, it was with Jay Cahy, and, like, we go out, and we're chatting about, you know, what his plan is and what we're doing for the day, and it was, like, that exact thing. And, like, getting to watch him look, search for fish, and just picking up some of the details that he gave me that day, it was like, this is the way to fish Sakakawea this time of year, you know? Like, those summer doldrums when it's just really boring otherwise.
Yeah, like, when we used to think the fish left the lake.
Yeah, exactly. They crawled in a hole somewhere and died, because it was just, especially big fish. I mean, you can always go get something cranking, but big fish, it's like, you got pre-spawn, it's a ball. You got right after, you know, they start eating again, it's a blast, and then they're gone. And it's like, well, where'd they go? Well, come to find out, they're just floating around. You know, they're all doing their thing. And yeah, it's made wildlife fishing so much more fun. I mean, gosh, it's just being able to cast all day long over and over and over again is just, it's the best.
Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. So pre-fishing this year, you know, and you kind of alluded to it, you know, you and your partner, you work good in the boat, but you also, you both like to fish. So you split up pre-fishing a little bit. Tell me a little bit about how the pre-fish went and what the conditions were like this year, and how, you know, maybe some of the pieces were putting themselves together.
So I mean, obviously it's not pre-fishing, but for the last month I've been like, I knew that technique was, it's the most stable compared to fishing like shallow fish. I used to love fishing shallow fish the beginning of July to the middle of, usually around the Governor's Cup time till the water kind of starts to drop. Like I loved the shallow back of the bay weed bite, which the guys, Windles, that got second place, come to find out they were back of the bay weed bite, and is what they said. Which blew my mind because I was watching the forecast and I saw there was a cold front. I saw there was rain coming, and my past experiences, like you get a clap of thunder or it drops 10 degrees, like they scatter, they're out. And, you know, they just, who knows where they go, but they're not in the weeds anymore. So I was like super focused this last month when I could get out. And my wife's just, she's just awesome. Like we fish six nights a week for the past month, just covering water. And we just went, and it's honestly, it was the most relaxing pre-fishing I've ever had. I mean, like 2 weeks before the tournament, I really was like, I had found there was a lot of big suspended fish, and we were beating on them. I mean, we were having a ball. We were going out after work. I'd get home at 6, we'd load the kids up, and 6:30 we're on the water, and we would go out and catch a 25-pound bag in 2-3 hours and go home. Like, so coming into it, I'm like, I know what they're doing. Obviously, weather can be huge. And I was nervous that with the cold front, with the rain, with the wind, like those fish wouldn't be up. They'd be laying on the bottom. You'd have to drag a chub or something across their face, and it just wasn't the case. I went out in that rain on Tuesday in the wind and the cold, and the first fish I casted at was, you know, a 6-pounder, and it just wolfed it. And I thought, wow, this might actually work out. So we covered a lot of water. We were separate for a couple days, and then on Wednesday and Thursday we had enough spots that I'm like, we're not even gonna fish all of our fish. And Bob would, he would, when we were just trying to cover water, he would drive the big motor and I would sit up on the bow and just pan back and forth at like 6 miles an hour until we started seeing suspended fish, and we would slow down. We would kind of cover that area, kind of count them, kind of get an idea of, you know, are they 5-pounders? Are they 6-pounders? Are they 3-pounders? And honestly, Wednesday and Thursday, we would go out to pre-fish at 7 o'clock at blast off time, and by 10:30 we'd look at each other and it's like, man, our fish are here. We'd cast at one at each spot. If it reacted good and was gonna eat, like I'd rip it away, and we tried all four of our dynamite spots and they were all good for 3 days in a row, and we were off the water by 10:30 at home playing with the kids and hanging out. Yeah, getting, dude, ready.
I mean, you make it sound so easy, but that's, you know, there's probably some factors in there. Like, I don't know if that's something that you were thoughtful of or not, but it's like, you know, if you kind of get that stuff put together, you know, for some people, I can easily see this where there might have been a diminishing return, you know, to staying on the water. Some people might say you're crazy for just having that kind of confidence, but you know, if your plan is coming together, you know, why mess with it maybe? But, you know, maybe my question is kind of direct, like, you know, why didn't you stay on the water and try to even expand on that?
We probably, looking back, maybe we should have.
Well, I don't know about that. I think you did all right.
It's like we had these spots and there were so many big fish and they were aggressive. And it's like, and they were spots that I didn't think we were really, there was nobody else looking at them. And I didn't think, I thought we're not going to have competition here. And I mean, 260 boats in a 20-mile chunk of reservoir, like it seems like there's competition wherever you go. And there was just I mean, I had been out there the weekend before. I had been out there the week before. I had been out all week, and nobody was looking at them. And I'm like, I don't think they're going to leave, and I don't – they've been here for some – one of the spots. I've been playing around with them for over a month now. And it's like, we were just – I knew we could go out and get really close to a 25-pound bag if they were eating the way they've been eating for weeks now. And – I knew if we got two 25-pound bags, like, we're smashing the record of the heaviest, you know, 10-fish bag ever weighed. And I'm like, let's just go home and relax and just fish it.
So it obviously worked out for you, and maybe we can kind of get to that point. Talk me through day one.
So we were last flight. So we're first flight's at 7. We were out at 8:30. And I was a little nervous. I was a little nervous there was going to be too much boat pressure going, not necessarily fishing our fish, but we learned last year, like, if you get too many boats driving over the top on their way to the spot, to, you know, further in, that those fish will drop down, especially if it's calm. I've learned if it's calm, they'll drop down and then they, you know, it might be hours before they come back up. So I was a little nervous going into day one being last flight, but I was also watching the weather, knew that the wind was picking up on day two further into the morning. So, you know, I was like, well, I would rather have the calm water in the morning on day two and be flight four on day one. And I mean, we came out of there and we came around the corner and there wasn't a boat within 500 yards of where we wanted to fish. And we started fishing and it started a little bit slow. We were maybe an hour in before we really started to see them, that we were literally watching them come up off of the bottom, come up and suspend and then just sit there. And I caught the first one at 9:30, and by 10:30 we had 7 fish in the box and we only had one that I'm like, I would like to upgrade. And it was like a 3.5 or 4 pounder somewhere in there. And I'm like, let's, you know, we got to save a slot. Like, let's go hit other spots now.
Because you can have 8 fish in the live well. I should clarify
correct.
That.
Yep. You ate Ray 5, Ham 8. Yep. Exactly. So we had 7 because we had already done 2, like, we had kept a 4 and then we caught a 5.5, you know, it's like, okay, that's a significant upgrade. Then our smallest fish was, I can't remember exactly, 4 something. And so we ran to our next spot, got there and we started looking around and there wasn't a fish to be found. I mean, there was nothing. There was no small 16 inchers. There was nothing. And the day before it was filthy with them. So we got a little nervous, but I was still figuring, like, we still have a 24-pound bag, something around there. Like, we did what we wanted to do. Let's go, you know, try to upgrade. And it was like 12 o'clock and we ran to our third spot and we pulled up and there were some boats there, but we kind of picked a gap where, you know, there was nobody. It was kind of in between two groups and I dropped the trolling motor down and we went 10 yards and I saw a big mark. I cast at it and it was a 5.5 pounder and we boxed it and we were out of there. So it was done. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I looked at our fourth spot on our way out of there and there was no boat sitting on that thing either. So that kind of put our plan for day two into motion, because when I caught that last fish, there was probably 8 other ones that I saw in 5 minutes that I know were, you know, 4+ pound fish. And that kind of put our day two plan into motion.
So you guys are leading after day one.
Yep. We had like 1.5 pounds, I think, lead.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, and in this day and age, you know, I have these conversations with these guys on the podcast, like, you know, in a 260 boat field on Sakakawea, like, you guys aren't the only ones on a good program. There's tons of big fish in that lake. So, you know, 1.5 pound lead
is nothing.
It feels phenomenal, but you still, you know, the intensity is still there. So lead me through that day two takeoff. Now, like any tournament, the boat draw, like any 2-day tournament, you know, the numbers flip. So then they, you know, yep. Everybody that went last the day before goes first today. I probably don't even need to clarify that. Anybody listening to this fishing more tournaments than I do, but anyways, so you had, you know, going into day two, you got the morning, the calmer water in the morning, and you get to capitalize on it by having a good day two boat draw. Walk me through.
So exactly. I mean, we're first flight out and we weren't going far. I mean, we decided to start where we had left off and we weren't going far. So I'm like, Bob, actually, he's like, you know, let's let everybody rip out of here and then we can just kind of come in behind. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So we blast off. We let everybody kind of get up in the lead and we just kind of hang behind and tuck back into our spot there. And we start looking around and man, there's some fish, but they're on the bottom. There's a couple nice ones that I see, but they're moving around really fast. And all of a sudden, like we start running into big clouds of smelt. And just from pre-fishing, I had found that if there was a lot of smelt in the area, the fish weren't aggressive. Like you could drop it in their face. They weren't eating it. Or they were chasing smelt, and when they're chasing smelt, like, man, it's tough to get a bait in front of them. And even if you do, they're so fixated on that school of bait that it's like they don't even see it. So we looked around for, like, 45 minutes, and I mean, like, now two more flights have come out, and I'm like, man, what are we doing? Like, should we go back to where we were on day one? Like, we kind of beat up that spot a little bit, but there was a lot of leftover fish. And I looked at our fourth spot that we hadn't fished at all yet, and there's getting to be some boats on the far end, but there was nobody where we wanted to fish. I'm like, let's just abandon this ship. Like, there's too many smelt. They're moving too fast. And we went over there, and it was the same thing. I stopped really short. I stopped a lot deeper than I normally do, and I dropped the trolling motor, and there was a 5.5-pounder laying 60 feet from the boat, and I cast out. Like, I don't even think Bob had his live scope in the water yet. I cast out and the thing inhaled. And that was at about 9:30. And we just kind of kept making circles a little bit bigger and bigger circles. And there was just, I mean, it was as fast as I could cast and put bait on that there was more fish to cast at. And we ended up having our bag for the day by 10:30. But we still had three slots in the live well to fill, you know, to upgrade. So we fished that, and then there was a little front that came through, and it got pretty breezy out, and there was a little, you know, rain showers, and those fish kind of seemed like they were getting beat up. There was a few more boats. Guys were starting to kind of drag chubs through the area, and it kind of petered out. So we ended up just kind of jumping from spot to spot that we had fished the day before. And I mean, that was kind of the end of it. We never did boat another fish. It was, the wind picked up, and man, by 2:00 there was, you know, 3-foot rollers, and you couldn't keep the trolling motor in the water. You couldn't see anything on the live scope because it was popping out of the water constantly. And it's like, well, we got what we got. We knew we had close to 25 pounds, and man, I figured 50 pounds is a big bag, and hopefully it's big enough. It was pretty nerve-wracking at weigh-in when you're seeing multiple 30-plus pound bags come in.
Yeah.
The two teams that were tied for second on day one were in the fourth flight, so we had hours of nail-biting to do before we found out.
Yeah, dude.
And I had heard some rumors that they had big bags from buddies, so it was a stressful time.
That's awesome though. That's what you remember though. Is like all, that's all part of the experience, man. That is so cool, man. So maybe talking about or whatever you're willing to share, whatever, you know, your setup, your casting, you know, what was your presentation or maybe kind of your gear selection? I mean, I like talking gear selection. Fish heads always like hearing about that stuff. What are some of your preferences when you're casting at these fish?
I mean, the biggest thing for me, and I learned it from Jay Cahy, is leaving your live scope set to the same depth and the same range, like, all the time. I mean, obviously, if you're fishing in 6 feet and you're fishing weeds, like, yeah. But, like, this bite, it's like, I left my live scope at 110 feet for the last 3 weeks. I left the sensitivity on the exact same, and I left the depth was locked at 35 feet. Like, we were fishing deeper than 35 feet, but I didn't care about any fish on the bottom. Like, if it was on the bottom, I didn't even look at it. We would go over 100 fish, and I wouldn't even pay attention to them because it didn't matter. Because the ones on the bottom were not eating, at least not what we were throwing at them. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing that really helped, you can judge your fish because they all look the same. You catch one 5-pounder, you remember what that mark looks like. Mm-hmm. You know what it looks like on your screen. And you don't let off the throttle until you see a mark that's that big or bigger. I mean, we actually went through, I've got 3 Interstate 31s in my boat, and both days we burned those things up by noon, 1:31. And I had a Dakota Lithium, that a 36 volt, just a single, that we would unhook the leads from the trolling motor out of the battery box and put them on the Dakota and just keep going. Like, I was literally on 10, unless I was casting at a fish, on 10, just looking for another one that I thought was 5 pounds. And if I thought it was 3 pounds or 4 pounds, like, I wouldn't waste the time to cast at it. And all we were, it's no secret, like, what people are doing. It's a jig and a crawler. And it's just, it's so old school, but man, does it work good. Like, you get it in front of their face, and I'd try to feather it. I'd try to get squared up where I knew that the fish was, I would try to get where the fish was facing me. And then I would bring it over the top of it, you know, a couple feet over that thing. And the water was pretty clear this week. Like, we had some wind, but it wasn't like blowing silt off of the points or anything. Like, there was some murk, which was, it was actually, I feel like, beneficial, but it wasn't dirty. And I would get it like 2 feet above them, and I'd bring it over the top. And if they reacted hard, I would more or less, like, you're fishing lake trout, like, play a little keep away and just kind of pump it and work it up. And I mean, some of the fish ate 10 feet from my trolling motor, and I would cast them at 80 feet and they'd be 20 feet down and they'd eat 10 feet from my trolling motor head, but they just seemed to like that. So that was kind of what we were doing. I mean, it's just really simple. It's not complicated. You look for a big fish, you put a jig in front of its face and hope it bites it. I mean, probably only 1 out of 10 did, but that's why you just cover water and only cast at the big ones.
Yeah, probably the most complicated part of all this is something you said earlier, is getting your understanding of what walleye fishing, for big fish anyways, used to be, out of your head.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, getting away from, you know, stressing about what we thought we used to know, or a bunch of waypoints that you've had for 10 years in your graph, you know, like, that's the most sophisticated part of understanding how to, in a tournament situation, utilize this technology and this type of pattern and this type of bite, right? Would you say something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even drop waypoints anymore. Like, because the fish are, obviously, they're constant. The suspended fish are constantly moving. So it's like, they like this shore. I mean, I'm looking for, when I went out pre-fishing, like, the biggest thing to find was, there's a ton of eaters up on this shelf. And then I would just, if I found a bunch of eaters, I would just scoot off of it. And I would start driving down the shore as fast as I could, cover water, just panning back and forth until it's like, oh, there's one, okay, here's a huge concentration. And, but they, you know, they'll move. They may be 300 yards further down the shore for whatever reason it is the next day. So it's like, it's not like when you're fishing them on the bottom, like you used to drag crawlers through them. It's like these fish are out slowly roaming around where the ones on the bottom that you traditionally fish in, they're kind of just sitting there.
You said one thing that you kind of had one spot or one area that you'd been fishing for a month. Like that spot sounds like it was pretty durable. Like that, it was pretty consistent. You had another area that was good one day and they were gone the next. Do you have any theories or thoughts or suspicions or anything that you're willing to share on, you know, what you feel like one spot compared to the other, why it was a little bit more durable and a little bit more, you know, consistent that they were there for the last month versus, you know, another spot where it feels like, you know, they can be here one day and gone the next?
That actually just confuses me as much as it sounds. Fair enough. Because the other spot, like the one that they disappeared, I mean, it was filthy, but it's not really, it's not a spot I would ever go fish. Like, I mean, I'd maybe used to go pull cranks on that shore and you'd do good, but usually it was in June and there was really, it just, I don't know, that doesn't have close access to real deep water. And it seems like close access to deep water is really key. Where the other spot, I mean, it is like, it was a community spot. I mean, on any given night, there's three boats trolling Lindy rigs or crankbaits across it. And I knew there was going to be a lot of pressure. And I had also been just beating up on them for like 3 weeks. I mean, obviously the last 2 weeks I left them alone just thinking, well, maybe they'll hang out here even with all the boat pressure. And I had kind of, I mean, I would go check on them, but I wouldn't just wail on them. I don't know. I mean, that's part of the fun of fishing, I guess. Like, why did the spot that didn't get touched and we had the same wind, like, where did all those big fish go? And why did this spot that had 50 boats fish it that day still have them on it? It's just, that's why I like it, man.
Yeah, man.
That's
it's like,
why it's fun.
Yeah, I think that's a big key for people that think forward sonar just catches the fish for you, and that we've gone beyond all understanding of walleye fishing now that we have forward sonar. The reality is we still don't know nothing about what's going on through their head.
And it's so far from the truth. Like last summer, I for sure caught less walleyes because I had live scope than I would have had I just went out and did what I always used to do. Go side scan, go drag cranks, and just fish. And last summer, I mean, it's just, it's a tight learning curve, and it's tough to know when to leave fish and know when, you know, this is worth staying at and fishing. And man, like it can get so frustrating fishing with live scope. It can irritate you so much because you can see them. And you can see them come at it, and they don't eat. And I've just really had to learn, like, if they're doing that, they're not going to eat. They don't want to eat. Like, just go find ones that will eat, because there are always fish somewhere that will eat. Like, look at tournaments. You might have the worst day ever and think nobody caught them, and somebody just beat the tar out of them.
But it's always been like that. Even before forward sonar, you always had to fish a tournament thinking that you had to put your head down no matter what, you know, where, you know, whatever it is that your confidence clings to, if it's not there that day, you got to find it somewhere. You got to check all your compartments and find some confidence somewhere, because you can absolutely just bet your birthday on the fact that somebody's going to catch them.
Absolutely. Which is why it's so fun.
Yeah, dude. And that's awesome, man. And this particular weekend, it was you and your partner. The North Dakota Gov Cup's always a fun one to talk about. And it's just super cool that, you know, your story and, you know, kind of coming from out of town, but you're definitely a local at this point, and you've definitely put your time in, and you've definitely, in a short amount of time, figured out, you know, how to utilize the forward sonar, which is just a fun you know, that's just a fun conversation that we're always having right now and how that's impacting tournament fishing. And it's super interesting. I mean, yeah, it's July, it's mid July, it's, you know, 90 degree days and storms. And it's that time of year where, you know, 3, 4, 5, definitely 10 years ago, you know, a podcast about catching big walleyes wasn't very popular, or I shouldn't say it that way. It just wasn't very relatable.
And yeah, it was about as boring as actually going out and doing it, because it was real boring.
Yeah, like, you know, like if it, you know, yeah, just, you know, if you don't have chubs, you don't have a chance. You know, like now we say, if you're not scoping, you're hoping. Well, back then it was like, if you weren't chubbing, you were hoping. And if you got crawlers and leeches, or, you know, if you're slip bobber, and if that's a thing or whatever, it's like, yeah, like 12 or 14 pounds a day, you know, I mean, you can look back on in the history and you know, but it's, yeah, it's a very interesting time now, and it's fun to have these conversations. It's fun to see, you know, folks like you guys coming, appreciating the resource and sinking your teeth into it. And yeah, you did it, man. You did it. You, do you have like a long list of fishing sponsors you want to, call out of?
just my day job, Blackwell Electric, you know?
Right on. Yep. Shout out the wife and the kids. They're the sponsors.
God, yeah. My wife. Yeah. And the good Lord for letting me live in North Dakota on Lake Sakakawea. I mean, other than that, like, it's just a blessing to be able to live where we do and get to go out every day and do it.
That's awesome, man. Dude, well, I appreciate it, Zach.